You're listening to a Las Vegas Sun sports talk podcast. This is the Rebel Room. I'm Ray Brewer, alongside with Mike Grimala, and we've got some interesting things, Mike, to talk about with the Rebels, who are playing their best basketball of the season. A big win at Colorado State, and then, of course, last night, we're taping this on a Wednesday, they beat UNR for the first time since 2018. The ship is heading in the right direction, my friend.
It looks that way, right? We got some optimism here, right? Doesn't that feel good?
It does, because if we would have taped this a week ago after that loss at San Diego State, maybe we wouldn't be as optimistic. So what do you think changed from 26-point loss at San Diego State to beating Colorado State on its home court?
I think the biggest thing to me that stood out, it may not be the most impactful, but the biggest thing that has stood out to me is the contributions that they're getting from role players now, where guys like David Mwaka, who, you know, for the first half of the season, not to pick on him, but he really, you couldn't play him for more than a couple minutes at a time because he just wasn't ready to play at this level. Now you look at him against Colorado State, he's giving you good minutes. He's giving you, don't even look at the points and the rebounds, but he's just out there, he's playing physical, he's getting rebounds, he's defending the rim. Guy like Justin Webster, who was came in with some expectations, didn't really do much the first half. Now he seems to have found his niche where he comes in off the bench, he'll pop in a three-pointer, hit a couple shots, he can give you something. You see Donovan Williams step up to be like the number two scorer. So it's just like guys are filling in now. It's not just like Bryce Hamilton doing it all by himself. You're starting to get like consistent good play from some of the other guys. So I think that's been the biggest thing. And you can see it starting to pay off on the floor, I think.
Yeah. And I also think that this team probably two things for me is, one, you have to remember they had what, 10 or so transfers who came into the program. So of course, early, they were still kind of getting used to how each other played. Maybe now that they're playing a little better, you could say it's because they've become more familiar with each other.
Yes, and I think that's sort of what I was a part of what I was getting at with those role players is that, you know, they're getting more familiar. The coaches are getting more familiar with those players. The roles are becoming more defined. Players know what's expected of them. Like they know when I go in, I'm going in for X amount of minutes. They want me to hit these spots on the floor. They want me to take these shots. Like it's kind of Bryce Hamilton said after the game that they're just kind of clicking right now. And I think that's a pretty simple way to put it. And I think it's probably apt. You just see guys going in and they sort of seem like they know what they're doing, which wasn't always the case through the first half when they were just sort of feeling it out. So it looks like they look like they're playing well. They got another game coming up at Utah State, a team that is playing really well right now. So we'll see how they do there. But would you say that they've turned a corner? Is two games enough? Two wins, granted big wins for UNLV. Is that enough to say they've turned the corner and that you're like, hey, let's go into this final month and let's see what they can do?
I mean, I don't know if they've turned a corner, but I don't know if that's the correct label, but I do think they're improved and they're heading in the right direction. You've got to remember with a new team, there's always going to be that kind of inconsistent play. And, you know, Utah State, like you said, the opponent on and the next game is playing really good. They killed Reno by like 30 points the other day.
Dropped San Diego State.
Yeah, and they're almost impossible to beat it in Logan, and that's where UNLV's heading. And, you know, will a good two-game win streak be erased by a bad performance at Utah State? And then we're back to, you know, if they go to Utah State and they win, yeah, I think you could say they turn the corner. But, you know, you got to think they'll be a 6 or 7 point dog at Utah State. And
that much?
I mean, they were only a 1 point favorite last night. As bad as Reno was against Utah State and on their home floor, they were only a 1 point favorite last night.
But that was also before, I think that spread was before we knew that Grant Sherfield wasn't playing. Mm-hmm. So that impacted UNR. Yeah, I don't. I think they'll go up there. I think they've got a chance to go up there and beat Utah State with the way they're playing right now. If Donovan Williams is healthy, and he said after the game last night that he was feeling good, he's healthy. If Bryce Hamilton is going to play like this on a consistent nightly basis, although he didn't shoot it that great last night against UNR, but if he's playing like this, Donovan Williams is playing like he is, and then the rest of the guys are – they've got that front court rotation. They've got Ham. They've got Iwakor. Now you throw Mwaka in there. That's like three guys that are coming in, and they're all athletic. And you can kind of see the vision sort of coming together. That's what has me so mm-hmm. optimistic right now, in case you can't tell. It's like the vision that the coaches had at the beginning of the year, I can kind of see it on the floor now, and it looks like it's working in the last two games anyways.
It's more in focus. Absolutely. I will say that – in my opinion, somebody who watched the game last night on TV, so not in person, but do you feel that maybe when Ham's not in the game, they're giving up a little too much on the offensive glass, or they're not as good at protecting the rim?
Yeah, Ham is their best guy on the interior. He is a hard worker, and he's athletic, he's tough, he does all that. You lose a little bit with Iwakor and Mwaka just because they're not as polished. Ham is like a fifth year senior. He's a guy who knows what he's doing, and he's pretty reliable too. Like you look at his stats every night, it's pretty much like 9 points, 10 rebounds every single night. And he shoots a high percentage, he finishes. Like he's very, very reliable. Iwakor and Mwaka, there's more of like a variance from game to game. They could play well, they could not play well. You don't really know. So yeah, they're definitely more hit or miss without Ham on the floor for sure.
Yeah, I just think that right now it's a group that's kind of got its confidence and got its swagger. And no matter what happens at Utah State, I hope they're able to keep that, because I really do think in a neutral court Mountain West Conference tournament, if they could somehow avoid San Diego State, who we know they don't match up well against, I think they've got a fighting chance to beat everybody else in the league. I haven't had a good chance to see Wyoming play yet, but I mean, obviously they've got a good record, just beat Colorado State at home in what looked like was a crazy environment. And, you know, I think that UNLV will have live action to make a run in the league tournament, which in the first year of the Kevin Kruger era, considering they lose Ham and that's basically it off this team, I think it's a good step in the right direction.
Yeah. Boise State is also out there. They've won, I think, you know, 10 games in a row, something like that. They're playing well. Yeah. Like you said, San Diego State is a bad matchup, but you just beat Colorado State, beat UNR. We'll see them against Utah State. It depends on the draw they get, but if they could win two games in the Mountain West tournament, I think people will get excited about it. How you said you watched the game on TV. How did the crowd come across watching it on TV? Could you notice a difference from earlier games? Because in the arena, I'll tell you, it was different. It was more lively. They had a full student section and it made a difference, but how did it play on TV?
I can't give you a fair answer because we had the game, the kids were doing their homework, so I had the game on mute. But I will say, to get those kids there, they had to give them free tickets and chicken, right? So everybody got a Canes meal. Canes isn't going to be there every game. So the next home game, do you expect there to be, you know, 4,800 students?
I don't. But maybe they should do that for every game for the rest of the season. Like, how serious are you about resurrecting the program? Like, mm-hmm. that seems like, to me, I know the athletic department is not made of money, probably not even making money. But if you're really serious about building it back up, why not do something along those lines for every, what do you got left? Six home games, something like that. Why can't you do that for the last month of the year and then try to build some momentum going into next year? But I will say, inside the arena, that student, it made a big difference. Like, that, you could tell that there was actually energy in the arena. The players were picking up on it. Everyone said in the post game, like, coming from pregame introductions throughout the entire game, it was like, it's just different to play in front of a crowd, which they haven't been able to really do for the last 2 years. So I don't know. I don't expect that kind of atmosphere the rest of the way, but I would like to see them try.
Yeah, it's an interesting time for UNLV because when I grew up, or even your initial years here in town covering the programs, there was no other competition for the sport entertainment dollar. Now it's decently spread out. So I think attracting people to watch your teams play becomes very difficult. And you know, the one surefire way obviously is to win, but I do commend Eric Harper. He, you know, he got up on that podium when he got hired and he said he's going to bring students back and he's going to die trying, right? And he was very dramatic. He was very focused on that for more than 50% of his introductory news conference. And last night they had a big win and there was some kids there to see it. So credit to the guy for executing, but it was just once, you know, you gotta keep that momentum going, man.
I will say, wasn't there a Golden Knights game happening in town last night at the same time as UNLV?
Yeah.
So, and they were still able to get a full student section. And even with
students can't hold for the Knights game.
Yeah. But so that's what I'm saying. Like, so that the Golden Knights won't eat into that so much. Like you can still even, I think the total attendance was 6,000 and something, which you look at the Thomas and Mac and they used to get 14,000 every night and you'd say, oh, it's only 6,000. But I'm telling you, like, it, even that makes a huge difference from where they were earlier in the season for any other home game. A full student section and 6,000 total fans, if you could do that for the rest of this season, that would be an amazing step forward for the program. I don't think they can. I'm just saying, like, I noticed it in the arena. It made a big difference. I would like to, it would be nice if they could even just get back to that level of in-person support. But the best way to do it is to win.
One thing you're right about is that even the game that I covered, the Cal game, even though there was only 5,000 people there, give or take, it was allowed 5,000 people. So you got to remember, most college teams play at like an 8,000 or 10,000 seat arena. UNLV plays in an 18,000 seat arena, and it's not realistic to sell that out every night. And many other colleges rely on a significant participation from students on their fan base. And maybe that's the way they're heading, right? Is, you know, for years we've relied on residents to come watch our games, and now we've got to rely more on students.
Maybe the Colorado State game was the best atmosphere they've played in this season. Last week at Colorado State in Fort Collins, it's a small arena. I would probably say, I don't have the score sheet in front of me, it was probably 8,000 fans in a small arena. It was packed. They were going nuts and it was crazy. Like, so UNLV last night, if they had, you know, 6,000, that's approaching that number. They just kind of spread out because Thomas Mack is so big, but that's enough to make a difference. So I would say, like, if last night was the benchmark, I know it was a rivalry game, they were doing all these giveaways to get more people through the doors. But if you set that as the benchmark and you can hit that more often than not, I think that would be a good initial goal for Eric Harper and that athletic department. You know, this year, next year, if you can stay around that number with those amount of students, like that's, I think they would have to be happy with that.
Yeah, but I really do think Kevin has got the blueprint for what could be a team that makes some noise moving forward. Earlier on the show, Mike, you talked about, we mentioned other teams in the league that are doing well. Boise has its winning streak. Utah State's looked well. Colorado State, Wyoming. How many teams from the league are you thinking get into the tournament?
At least three, I would say.
Okay. Right?
Like, it depends on who wins the Mountain West tournament. But you could have multiple at large teams, I would say. Like, the ratings are good. I'm pulling it up right now. Yeah, Boise State, San Diego State are, you know, top 30 in KenPom. Utah State is 33. Like, those teams are usually – that's a pretty solid spot to be for an at-large type of bid. And then if you get someone outside those three, like if – and then you got Colorado State, which is, you know, just lost to UNLV, but they were top 25 earlier in the season. Like, there's four teams that are ranked – you know, in the top 40 nationally. So like it's a good year. Like the league is kind of bouncing back this year. You're seeing some good teams. And then even that middle tier, Fresno State, Wyoming, teams that are sort of outperforming this year are just solid, tough to beat. That's kind of the tier that UNLV is trying to get into or prove that they belong in. So yeah, I mean, the league is good. You're going to see three teams at least, I would say.
Mm-hmm. Of course, they lose to Fresno at home, what, 2.5 weeks ago, give or take. Robinson just took over and dominated them from start to finish.
Yeah, yeah. Was he Marvin Menzies, right? Was unrecruited?
He went to Centennial. I'm not sure if that was TJ. I think it was Marvin I think it was Menzies. But it's tough to identify a kid who doesn't play at a marquee high school program, right? If that kid was at Gorman, okay, maybe Menzies didn't do a great job, as you know, recruiting locals. But I don't know. I don't know, Mike. It's you know.
Yeah, I'm not casting aspersions. I was just sort of asking an idle question. I was not trying to cast aspersions. I was asking, was that during the Menzies era or was that Otzelberger? Because I think it was like 2018-ish, I would say. So I'd have to go back and look it up. But yeah. Mm-hmm. A kid, he enjoys playing against his hometown school.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, today is National Signing Day. Not obviously as important anymore as it used to be because the majority of the recruits come in December. But UNLV, I think, got its quarterback, former four-star recruit, got beat out at Tennessee, and somehow finds his way to UNLV. I think he's an upgrade, and I think he's got an inside chance to be the starter.
Yeah, Harrison Bailey, former, you know, top recruit. When UNLV got their commitment from this kid, and I was looking into his background, and I saw the offers that he had coming out of high school, it was ridiculous. You couldn't believe it. It's like Alabama, Ohio State, LSU, Georgia, Michigan, like every single Oklahoma, like literally every blue blood in the country was recruiting this kid and actively and offered him and wanted him. And then he played 1 year at Tennessee as a freshman. He got into a couple games. He played well in the games that he, in the action that he saw. And then, came in as a sophomore and things changed and, a coaching change, and then they bring in some transfers. They beat him out. He sits on the bench all year. And then towards the end of the season, he decides to transfer. So he's a kid who was among the highest of recruits. Like he's the bluest of blue chips coming out of high school. And it's not like he busted, he played well in the action that he saw as a freshman. And then, he's available. So that's a huge score for UNLV. I don't see how he's not like the presumed front runner for your starting job going into next year. I know they've got a couple incumbents, returning, but to me, like that's the guy you got to beat out, right?
I would think so. The local kid who from Liberty that signed with UNLV,
Jaden Maiava.
Yeah, that kid on the week of signing day got a pretty significant SEC offer and wanted to take it. And his parents basically told him, hey, you got to go. We want you to go to UNLV. You got to go to UNLV.
Oh.
So, maybe they've got, they're developing some depth at that position where you've got Bailey and Brumfield is your one and your 1B, or your one and your two. And then you got a developmental guy in the back.
Cameron Frail as well. It was just the Mountain West freshman of the year. I mean, kind of by default. He's really the only freshman who played in the conference, just kind of by happenstance. But they've got some guys coming back, and I think Bailey is probably the top of that group. But yeah, is this like, when was the last time that UNLV was this excited at the quarterback position? I know people were high on Armani Rogers when he was named the starter as a redshirt freshman coming into that year. But, there were big expectations on him, but It seems like, I don't know if they've ever had a guy like this in a long time, like a stud quarterback who was
Jason
supposed to
come Thomas, in. Who led him to the Las Vegas Bowl, was a USC commit, and then he dropped back here with John Robinson and was the MVP of the Las Vegas Bowl. And Kuiper had him like atop the big board at one point. Yep. And then he kind of fell off and they wanted him to become a tight end in the NFL and he didn't want to become a tight end. And, you know, Armani Rogers is being a tight end at those Senior Bowl practices and everybody's raving about him. So maybe that's his pathway to the league.
Yeah. So what was that, 20 years ago for Jason Thomas, like five, six years ago for Armani Rogers. And I think this guy's probably better than, or more of a prospect than Armani was as a quarterback. So I mean, it's pretty significant for UNLV to land a kid like this.
Yeah. I mean, he definitely looks the part. Now, I guess the other thing is we're not quite sure who the running back's going to be next year.
No idea. Like, we've got to see, I guess,
that probably still open. That's
probably the main storyline going forward is what do they do at that spot? Like, they don't really, they're, I believe Doug Brumfield was like their second leading rusher for the season. Like, they didn't give any other running backs any carries aside from Charles Williams last year. He was the entire running back room. So it's not like they're bringing anyone back that they have any confidence in or that they've been grooming for that job. It's just basically plug and play, right? They're going to see who's in the portal, like in the spring. And then if that's your pitch, if there's a running back that's available, that's talented, you can go to them and say, hey, we just had a running back who ran for 1200 yards and 15 touchdowns. And all those carries are gone. We don't have anyone else. We are going to give you all those carries. So if you want to have that kind of season and that kind of production, like we can give you that playing time and we can give you all those carries, come play for us, which seems like a pretty good pitch to me. So I don't know who exactly is available in that portal right now, but doesn't it seem like they're just going to plug and play?
Yeah. Well, I will tell you the one thing I'm almost positive about is we will not know at the end of spring who the quarterback will be.
Because I would not expect to know that until
Bailey, the starter, and risk losing the other guy in the transfer portal. Because
I wouldn't expect them to announce that until kickoff of week one.
Yeah. Yeah. And knowing the way he chooses, it could be Cameron Friel that runs out there, or the one guy who played in the San Diego State game from TCU.
It hurts to think about that opening game last year when the game that they probably should have won if not for that quarterback decision. But I think that if Bailey comes in and he plays well and he's coming in time for spring ball, I believe. So if he's playing and can win that job at some point in the offseason, you can hopefully have an entrenched quarterback for the entire season. And let's see if someone can do that for the first time in a long time here.
Yeah, and maybe he has the kind of impact that the San Jose State quarterback had.
Yeah, that's one thing the portal does. If you can get that quarterback in here, you can have a quick turnaround. Like, there is, if Bailey comes in and he's the real deal, and all of a sudden you have one of the best three or four quarterbacks in the conference, there's no reason you can't go 500 and make a bowl game, I would say. Exactly. Not to start pumping the tires this early and get you this fired up about UNLV football when we're still, 8 months away, but there it is.
Exactly. Well, everyone, we enjoy talking to you about UNLV athletics, and we will be back sooner than later, but thank you for listening to a Las Vegas Sun Sports podcast. This is the Rebel Room. Thank you, Mike.